welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Hey, the last couple of weeks I have been unavailable, but I ran a couple of reruns. Hopefully you enjoyed those shows, but tonight is brand new. And it's going to be on what the plan is for our planet in general, and to tell you a little bit about the soul behind our planet, because it's like, you can think of it, the planet as being a giant being who has a soul and everything else. And I'm going to describe, in somewhat greater detail than I have in prior shows, something about what that plan is about and how the whole planet actually works. I think this may help because a lot of people these days are wondering, is there any plan that's going to save us? And, you know, things are not looking that great at the present moment, and I agree. But that has to do with the fact, and I'm going to just throw this in right at the beginning of the show, since about 1975, the results of what's going to happen on Earth, at least in any near term, are going to be based upon what human beings do or don't do. Ooh, you might say. Okay, yeah, that's something to think about. In the meantime, if you would like to call in while I'm on the air, you can do that. But if you're in the U.S., give us a call at 877-876-5227. And those of you in Canada can reach us at 1-888-815-9756. Okay, so let's start off by I love defining things. By me telling you that the way our planet works is that there is a focus on a certain type of one of seven types or more of energies that develops first pre-life and eventually life on Earth. And each one of these energies develops a sense, or a major sense and a major chakra within the life forms that respond to that type of energy. At any particular time, some life forms have some of senses that respond more because they have those senses in their bodies and they're well developed. And at other times, in other circumstances, some life forms do not have either the sense or they don't have it well enough developed in them. And so they are at a disadvantage, you might say, in being able to develop their form of life. That doesn't mean they can't exist. It just means they might be not the top dog. And not only that, but they might become food for the life as well as other issues. So, thinking about it from that standpoint, I'm going to start right from the very beginning. Yep, I'm going back 4.6 billion years ago. That's a long time. And Earth at that time did not have life on it as we would recognize any kind of form of life, because it was a super heated mass of liquid metals and rocks and that sort of stuff. And it was becoming a world, but it really couldn't support any life. The atmosphere it had, of what it had, was too heated and toxic for anything to really exist in. And it took several hundred million years for Earth to develop a beginning of life in which one sense existed in each type of life form. And these life forms were very microscopic. Now, the interesting thing is it's been recently determined, although esoterically this has been known for a very long time, that sometime around that time, about 4.3 billion years ago or so, Earth got whammed pretty hard by another planetoid that crashed into us at an angle and knocked out a whole bunch of stuff out of Earth and created our moon. Isn't that interesting? This also changed the nature of the planet. We're still in the first part of this story, though. And things that take place when there's only one ray focused on the planet, and that ray happened to have been the ray that is called the first ray, happen usually through very destructive, we think of destructive and violent acts. So the first ray is the ray of creation, but it oftentimes happens first through destruction. And so this was a destructive thing that actually allowed the Earth to develop the kind of life that it eventually was going to develop. You might say, well, how did it do that? If it made a big crash onto the Earth and it knocked out enough stuff so that within a short time we had a moon, why would that be a good thing? Well, if you've been watching any of the science stuff on cable, or maybe satellite, you might have noticed that they've been talking about the moon being very critical to the kind of life that Earth has on it. And without the moon, there wouldn't be any life as we know it, and there certainly wouldn't be any advanced life. That might be surprising. Many people don't think the moon is all that important, but it actually has to do with keeping the Earth stable within its orbit and on its axis. And if you take the moon away, the Earth sort of starts wobbling around and can even move to the point where it's spinning almost sideways sometimes. And the seasons would go wacko. Our climate would be impossible and intolerable. And even the most adaptable life forms would find it very difficult to live in such a world. And so this is a good thing that we have a very large, actually, moon that stabilizes our planet and makes it revolve in a way that gives life, as we know life to be, a better chance to survive. And all this is taking place when only one type of energy, first ray energy, is being focused on Earth. Isn't that fantastic? Now, gradually, over the next hundreds and hundreds of millions of years, the first ray is focused, but there are other rays, slightly sub-rays, that come in. And so life does develop some diversity. Not much, though. Amazingly, it stays single-celled for the most part, very microscopic, and it doesn't develop much complexity to it. Because, after all, the life forms, for the most part, have one sense. You pick the sense, but whatever it is, they have one of them. Well, one sense isn't really going to do very much for a life form. So it's hard to develop life with much complexity and diversity when it has one major sense and maybe from a subray, a minor one is here or there developed. It doesn't really get very far. And this is a fascinating part of development on our planet. This went on for hundreds and hundreds of millions of years. Actually, went on for billions of years in total. Because if you recall, the moon may have been produced sometime around 4.3 billion years ago, something like that. Nobody knows exactly for sure, but they're guessing. Even if it was 4 billion or 3.9, it doesn't matter whatever number you would like, it still comes out to be about the same thing. That until, and this is going to surprise many of you, until about 600 million years ago, almost all life was little microscopic things like bacteria and algae that were producing the atmosphere that eventually would produce more advanced kinds of life and was changing the overall scope and way the planet existed. There's another little wrinkle in this whole picture, and that is that at least once, and maybe and probably twice, our planet froze up. It became so cold that no life could exist on the surface of it at all, and what little microscopic life there was had to live like a mile below the surface of the planet, and then that life had to become very resilient and strong to developing itself. That's sort of the adaptive model in evolution. And that life then resurfaced, literally, as the planet rewarmed itself. Now, how and why it did that's a little complicated, and I won't go into it in today's show. But the interesting thing is this is a plan. I want you to see, and I'm hoping by the time I'm done tonight, you will at least see my viewpoint. You don't have to agree with it, of course, and that's okay. And if you disagree, give me a call for sure. But there's a design to all this. If things did happen almost exactly as I'm telling you, and I want you to think about this as we go through the show, there wouldn't be us. That's what I'm trying to get to, because us are important. We may be turkeys, and I agree with many people. There are a lot of us out there that are turkeys. Maybe I'm one of them. I don't know. But the point is that there are so many people that are making so many mistakes. It's hard for us to believe that we're such an important part of life, but we are. And without us, there's a very serious problem in the whole system. But you won't get to that point until you understand the beginning. And so that's where we're coming from tonight, the part that I've skipped over many times when I've talked about this subject. But tonight I thought I'd delve into it. What the heck? You've missed me live for a couple of weeks, so now you're going to get the real deal. I wish we had more time, by the way. And if we run out of time on today's show, I'll just continue to next week. I will make it like part two, because I'm not sure that I will actually get through all this. There's a lot to tell. After all, we're talking about the entire evolution and super evolution or spiritual evolution of our planet. Very important stuff. Okay, so we had to have a moon. Without a moon, you can forget it. We're not going to get very far in developing life as we know it on our planet, or even as we don't know it, for that matter. And then we had to have this freezing effect, without going into too much detail, so that there's a push on life to adapt it to conditions that are fairly extreme, and to wipe out some forms of life that might be in the way of something new. You might say, well, what's going to be new after you get one sense is good and maybe a couple that aren't, one or two that aren't really working very well? Well, what's good is a collection of cells instead of one cell that work together. And when they work together, they each develop something more than just a sense. They develop maybe two senses or three or more, and at least two that are primary, because this is the beginning of what is called, in spiritual terms, the second round. And that second round develops at least a minimum of two major senses in life forms. Two major senses. Now, you can think, well, what senses are they? Well, it depends on the life form. Some might be they can hear and they can see. Others, they can touch and they can smell. And I mean, you can pick a sense. But the point is that this is what's going on from about just over 600 million years ago on, after the big snowball Earth had been developed at least probably twice. Okay, now these more advanced life forms, though, and they are definitely more advanced, begin by being relatively immovable. They are sort of stuck at the bottom of the ocean. And one of the things that they do is that they're learning to sense themselves from other things. That's a good thing. They're also able to, have a sense of the environment that is good for them or not good for them when they plant themselves wherever they are at, because they can't move around much. So those are important senses, and that's the beginning of diversity in life. It allowed life to become something that was more inclusive because it was looking for something of likeness in itself and in other things. The likeness in itself was its ability to use many, many cells to develop itself instead of one cell. An important difference, believe me. The inclusiveness comes from the fact that the ray that was most focused on the planet during the second round was the second ray. And the second ray has characteristics of love and inclusiveness. It's not only creative and willful and purposeful as the first ray is, but it now includes, amazingly, this business of there being inclusiveness and love and other good things that species have to develop, but they need at least two major senses to be able to do that. You seeing that there's a plan here? I'm trying to do it, and I'm doing it very quickly. If I'm not being successful at this, it's because of time, believe me. If you want to know more, you can go to a book I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning. It will explain it much better. Or you can call in, or you can contact me at any time, and I'll talk to you about it. All right, so let's go on with how the Earth is developing itself. I find this so fascinating. I hope you do, too. Okay, so for now, we're seeing there were billions of years, to develop this whole first ray and first sense type thing with mostly single-cell creatures. Now we got multiple-cell creatures developing more than one sense and becoming inclusive to some extent, and also being exclusive to some extent, and even preying upon other species, but not until they are able to create some level of movement. Now, the movement part is a very interesting thing about this, because movement is like the third part of our Creator's whole scheme of development. And movement comes from the ability to take the first two senses and at least develop a little bit of a third sense that allows a being to determine which first ray issues of choice how and what it wants to do in terms of its activity or movement. It's a very fascinating thing how this all comes about. So about 100 to 120 million years or more after we start seeing life develop in the bottom of our seas, that pretty much is just stuck where it is, you suddenly see life that can move around and that is doing something a lot more than just being stuck someplace. And the very parts of this life, these life forms, many of them were insect-like, and others were starting to become fish-like. So all of that's happening. Anywhere from, it could be even 50 up to about 120 million years, gradually you see this change in life on Earth. And again, it's because the senses are becoming better developed and because life is starting to develop some ability to create some movement. Some life is, not all life. Other life doesn't necessarily move. The parts that move we call animated, and we refer to it as an animal type of life. Some of life actually remains stationary, or more so stationary than most of the life, and that we call plant life. Very interesting, isn't it? Okay, so all of that is going on, and while it's going on, the atmosphere is drastically changing. There's a lot more oxygen. And why is there a lot more oxygen? Well, I'm going to tell you why when we come back from break, because the program's running away from me. So when we come back, I'll tell you why you got to have a lot more oxygen and how it all fits together in about 2.5 minutes.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. ViroPel is a dietary supplement. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Colds and flu are a problem that many want answers and alternatives for. Let me tell you about ViroPel, a certified all-organic herbal and nutraceutical formula designed to support relief from symptoms of cold and flu. With so much concern about potential bird flu outbreaks, there may be some help. ViroPel's patents include proven immune enhancement, adding significant preventative and other immune system benefits. In effectiveness trials, most experienced relief from symptoms in 2 to 3 days. Think about how long your last flu symptoms lasted. Incredible and amazing are the words most often used to describe the effects of ViroPel. Using 136 of the highest grade ingredients in a new science gives ViroPel its effectiveness. Relief could be just 1 to 3 days away. To learn more or to purchase ViroPel, call Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. That's 800-777-7850. Or visit ViroPel, that's ViroPel.org.
Well, we're back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and hopefully you're enjoying tonight's show. We're going to be covering basically what is the plan for Earth and what are the more spiritual reasons for developing things the way they are. And also, where our role, what our role as human beings is in this. I think it's important to understand that we may not make it all the way through today, and I'll do the best I can, but if we don't, hey, I'll just keep going next week, you know me. And yes, I'm going to be live. I know last couple of weeks we did some reruns, but hopefully those were shows that you either wanted to rehear or maybe you weren't tuned in at that time. Okay, so let me continue on. Why more oxygen? What the heck is oxygen about? Well, even the elements have a ray focus. And oxygen is a third ray focus, meaning it has to do with movement or activity. In order to have increased movement and activity, you got to have more oxygen, because oxygen creates heat and allows energy to be produced at greater rates within bodies. Yeah. So after there was this last snowball episode, oxygen really started to increase because the creatures that were now developed started to produce prodigious amounts of oxygen. I mean, like going from like 1% oxygen in our atmosphere up to like 15 to 20%. That's close to what it is today. And so this allowed animals to be developed. Animals are creatures that can move around on their own. And in order for a creature to be able to move around, it has to have a lot more oxygen. You might say, well, I thought they were in the ocean. Well, that's true. You see, oxygen gets dissolved in water and allows creatures that live in the ocean to be able to move around and to be able to breathe. They may use gills or some other method for collecting the oxygen instead of lungs, but regardless of the method of collection, they're still using the same element we're using to move around, oxygen. You got to have a lot of it if you're going to do a lot of movement. Okay, so that's the plan. You see, all of this is put together to make it so that life will work the way we think life is, which is the way it is on Earth, and the way it is on a lot of planets, by the way. Earth particularly likes oxygen a lot because it makes creatures that use a lot of it. Some other planets use different methods of creating life that relies a little less or somewhat less on oxygen than Earth, but that doesn't matter. It's still a basic truism that if you want animation, you better have some oxygen around or it may be difficult to achieve. Okay, so if we look at the fish and these insect-like creatures that are living in the oceans, they are from about 475-480 million years ago, they're just all over the place. Yeah, there's a lot of them. And more are being developed. Finally, the fish become more dominant than the insects because they actually have more senses. This is a very interesting thing. The insect type of life actually had better senses in some cases, but the fish had more of them. Very interesting. They were able to integrate their senses together in a better way, so they had a bit more intelligence to their actions in comparison to the insect type of forms of life. And guess what? The insect forms were more powerful in some circumstances because their senses were better, more keen in some ways, but because they couldn't integrate them together as well as the fish eventually became the more dominant, more successful forms of life than the insect types of life that lived in the oceans now. I'm not talking about land yet, because really, on land, there really wasn't anything going on. It's more difficult to create movement on land because the force of gravity requires that a life form be more efficient in its use of oxygen. It has to be, or it won't be able to do much because the force of gravity is so much greater, about three times when you're not in seawater. Well, you may not have known that, but I'm sure everybody, if you think about it, makes sense. If you've ever been in seawater compared to walking around, it's just a lot harder, right? Well, the same principle is applying here in terms of movement. Okay, so eventually, this whole system is designed to keep life developing. We call it evolution, but you know what? It's a lot more complex than evolution, and there's a plan behind it. The thing that's wrong about evolution is there's no plan. And when there's no plan, there's no meaning. And life without meaning doesn't make much sense to me. It might to you, and if it does, you can call me and we can talk about it. But at any rate, let's go on and talk about how eventually some of the insect life and some of the fish life decided that, hey, maybe I can live on the drier parts of land and out of sea water, which is salty, and maybe just into unsalty water, which again takes more oxygen to live in because the salt helps to make it easier to move. It's more buoyant. Very interesting stuff. Also, some of the plant life that was living in the oceans became able to live on land. Now, several things had to happen in order for this to take place. The days had to become longer. Why did the days have to become longer? Because plants work on a cycle in which, in many cases, they are taking in carbon dioxide and expelling oxygen. They're still on an oxygen cycle, just kind of like the reverse of what we normally think about it with animals. Remember, they're not animated. They're not really moving around. So they don't have to use oxygen the way animals do. And they do this cyclically. They need to be able to do this where they have longer periods of time because of the motion inside of them is really slow. So the days have to get longer. And remember I told you about the moon? Well, the funny thing about it is, and it's not so funny, it says the moon has aged with the Earth. It's moved further and further away from the Earth. And this has caused our days to become much longer. The moon moving away from the Earth has caused the days to become longer and longer, till they're 24 hours a day, but they were only maybe 6 to 8 hours when plants were developing themselves on the face of the Earth. That's the minimum time that is required for many plants to be able to sustain life. So before that, you wouldn't have been able to sustain life. Plants wouldn't be able to because the days weren't long enough. You had day, night, going too fast. Planet was spinning around too quickly. Now we suddenly have it made so that there's a balance. There's plants, and sure enough, the plants are starting to make more and more oxygen in the atmosphere, which allows some of the fish and some of the insects to get out of the water and either onto dry land or at least into fresh water. And in either case, they get to use more oxygen, which makes them more active. When they become more active, they have to employ more intelligence in them. Hey, isn't this interesting? I find it interesting. I'll bet you no one's ever explained it to you this way, because when you start putting it all together, evolution makes a lot of sense, and science makes a lot of sense. We shouldn't throw away science. We should realize that God created evolution and science. Why would that be such a terrible thing? It's just that you've got to connect all the dots to see what it's all about and not look at it through a narrow view, in which case you may not see that all of this really fits together to make sense. Okay, so what goes on after that? Well, eventually, some of the fish become amphibians, which means that they can live on land except to have their offspring, and then they need to get back to water. And they also have very thin skins, and they don't like being away from the water too long because they dry out, poor things. But the other thing is that the plants really evolve, too, into eventually trees, which provides habitat for all kinds of new kinds of life to develop. Trees are a great thing, really wonderful. And in addition, the insects, believe it or not, for a while become extremely dominant as a life form. If you go back like 360, 370 million years ago, they actually become super life forms because for a brief time, before there were very many animal forms of life other than insects, the oxygen levels rose to like 40%. That's dangerous. I mean, if you light a match, it could start a big house fire or something. Everything burns very quickly. Everything becomes very, very animated. And the thing about insects is that they don't have lungs. They kind of get their air through holes inside of them. And they rely upon the ambient oxygen around them to be able to create movement. Well, if you give them more oxygen, you know what happens? They get a lot bigger, a lot faster, and they're kind of nasty-looking things, too. There were, you know, there were like cockroaches that were 2-3 feet long. Honestly. No kidding. And there was like centipedes that were as big as some pythons. So, I mean, there were amazing types of insects running around because there were huge amounts of oxygen that allowed them to become extremely active. There were also, of course, amphibians. And the amphibians, I had to be careful about the insects because, you know, some of them could actually become eaten by these insects. But in addition, they were kind of trapped because they had to be around water in order to sustain their life. Well, as things turned out, because it was a period of time where some of the oxygen actually fluctuated, it went up and it went down, it went up and it went down. Well, this made it very difficult for the insects to continue to be large because some of them had to shrink back down, and some of the amphibians found that they could eat the insects then and they could sustain themselves that way, and they began to develop skins that would resist the permeability of oxygen, and instead of being a servant to water, they could get away from it, and they also developed hard shells around their eggs, and then they became reptiles. Yeah. So the amphibians kind of became reptiles. The plants grew bigger and bigger, by the way. And the insects, they couldn't deal with the fact that, hey, this million years, it's lots of oxygen. Next million years, there isn't as much. And they had no way to adapt to that problem because they were hard-shelled for the most part on the outside, and they couldn't change that as easily as the softer fleshed animals like amphibians and eventually reptiles could. They weren't as flexible or adaptable. They could only get bigger or smaller, but they couldn't change the very structure of how they were put together. And they needed to do that. Luckily for us, they couldn't, because if they could develop lungs and other kinds of features, we'd be in big trouble. We'd have cockroaches today as big as 10 feet tall or something. That would be very bad. Wouldn't want that. But you see, the planet didn't want it either. The soul of this world knew what it was doing. It understood that the progression of life wasn't for life to become just one or two very good senses, but no integration of those senses into any high level of intelligence. That's the way insects are. It didn't want life to stay at that level. It wanted life to become intelligent and eventually conscious. And for that to take place, it limited insects by just making exoskeletons and other kinds of restrictions on the way that they might develop. Fascinating. Very fascinating. Well, then there were tremendous crises, by the way. Oh, all kinds of things happened. Volcanic action. Changes from one continent to multiple continents. The changes in the atmosphere. Changes from outer space. We had big things like asteroids and comets. It came and made tremendous, we'll say, upheavals in stressing life. Eventually, the reptiles were pretty much put into a position in which only a few of them could exist at all. One type would become more inclusive and eventually mammalian in its abilities, which means it could breed young within itself, and it could maintain its own body temperature all the time, and that it could adapt to nighttime living. Whereas another part of the reptilian life became extremely agile, and it could integrate its senses at rates that no life had ever done before. It could bring together its senses to do things that we would say were extremely intelligent for its brain size, because it didn't have the largest brain by any stretch, but yet it was amazing in its ability to conquer its environment and to adapt as necessary. Those were the dinosaurs. Yeah. And also their counterparts that lived in the oceans, plesiosaurs and others that lived in the oceans. Think of dinos without feet, but fins and that sort of stuff. And then there were the pterosaurs that kind of flu eventually, but they came a little later. I'm just talking about the very beginning of dinosaurs. When was that? That was like about 235, 240 million years ago. By 225 million, they were the dominant life form. Dominant, really. And the amazing thing about them is that they, for a very long time, we're talking about 180 million years, give or take, they were able to adapt to tremendous changes in the Earth and to become incredibly intelligent, but not conscious. There's a big difference. And they didn't have great brain sizes, but what they did have, they were able to use at levels that we don't use today. Now, I know that a lot of biologists, some who are probably listening to the show, have different theories about this. And I'll talk to you about some of their theories when we come back. But it's important to give a little bit more on different sides so everybody has an understanding. Well, we'll be back in again in about 2.5 minutes, maybe 3 or so.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Let me tell you about most supplements that help support joint health, movement, and ease. They usually contain a few helpful substances that work on some people moderately well. For many others, these levels of help are either not enough or are not helpful at all. But there is a product that contains 36 different high-potency and very effective ingredients that support overall joint health, movement, and ease when moving. It's Freedom of Movement by Alternative Health Approaches, and it works in many different ways. This formula is critically balanced to synergistically and dramatically improve joint movement through supportive health, and usually within several hours. The relief generally lasts for an entire day and over time can be permanent. Freedom of Movement comes with a money-back guarantee. Even shipping is refunded for the first bottle. This unique formulation has helped thousands to maintain joint health. The price is $24.95 for a 90-caplet bottle. It's available from Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. Give this powerful all-natural supplement a try if you haven't found relief from other sources. That's Freedom of Movement. Call 800-777-7850.
Okay, we're back, and this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I just heard something interesting from the engineer doing the show. He said, first of all, we have a lot of listeners, which is always good to know. I really appreciate everybody who's listening, whether you agree with what I'm saying or not. Thank you very much for listening. But he said that some people, like maybe 10 at a time, may be jumping off because they don't like something I say. But then we got another 10 or 20 coming back on. So very interestingly, or even more than those numbers, might be 20 or 40 or whatever. The point is that this is unusual, if they've ever seen this, because I'm talking about a subject that is a little controversial, yeah? Because I'm trying to tell people who are creationists, so to speak, or people who are very anti-evolutionary, that evolution actually is part of God's plan. But I'm also telling people who are very scientific that there's a spiritual principle being applied, And there's a godly or soul-like mechanism that's involved, an intelligence that's behind evolution. And they're not mutually exclusive, as many people think they are, because there is this plan, but you have to see the whole plan in action. And luckily, when we went to break, I was going to say that science basically is only discovering pieces of the puzzle, and hopefully the whole puzzle will come out when we add metaphysics to science. So let me continue on with my story. Hopefully we'll get through it. If we don't be alarmed, because I'm going to continue with this for next week, so don't worry about it. Okay, so we're just talking about how dinosaurs, which are really fascinating creatures, had a small, very relatively small brain, yet had more intelligence than we might assume them to have. And recently they discovered some human beings that lived like 18,000 years ago or so on isolated islands that had very small brains but seemed to be far more intelligent than the basic rule of thumb, which is you compare brain size to body size, and that gives you a ratio of intelligence. Well, I have to tell you something. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. I have never agreed with that principle. Some animals may have a relatively small brain and be quite intelligent, and other animals may have a huge brain and not be more intelligent, maybe even less. I'll give you an example. Neanderthals, that's a group of human beings that lived from about 350,000 years ago or so till about 28,000 years ago, or maybe less, and they were running around with brains at least as large as us, maybe bigger, but they were not necessarily able to think as well as we think. They had a different system of senses, and we'll get to that maybe not tonight, maybe next week, but I'm going to explain how and why that's the case. So, interestingly, we can't go by this brain size business that has been used. It's as silly an idea, actually, as some other things were in biology 100 years ago, like the cranial shape in human beings and stuff. Brain size is not a pure indication of intelligence. So the dinosaurs, amazingly, were able to integrate their senses better than any creature before them. And in some cases, they had better senses besides. And this integration of sense gave them amazing levels of intelligence. And some of them reached very high levels, particularly towards the last, say, 100 million years of their reign, and especially in the more predatory ones. The ones that ate plants, okay, they may not have been the smartest of creatures, because they just walked around and ate plants. But you know what? The ones that were very smart may have been much smarter than we ever assumed them to be, because they lived more like in packs, and they seemed to have a family structure that were way different than we think of reptiles today. So a very, very different kind of lifestyle that would have required an increased level of integration of sense and even some level of consciousness. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that there was a reptile that also didn't die out from all the stresses about 250 million years ago, which is called the Permian extinction, for those of you who need to know. And this particular group of reptiles actually became mammals, really. They developed into the mammalian family of creatures. And mammals are different than reptiles because they are developing a completely new way of existence. Instead of developing a very high level of intelligence, they were developing an additional, and sometimes less intelligence, but an additional factor, and that is love or consciousness. They became much more able to use what intelligence they had to gain greater understanding so they could extrapolate and understand better the knowledge that they did have. Now, humans can do this extremely well, but all mammals are better at doing this than even the dinosaurs ever could have been. And the dinosaurs developed themselves during the third round the round when intelligence became the most prominent factor, because the third ray, that particular chakra sometimes referred to in human beings as the throat chakra, was the chakra that was being developed the most. So dinos were like great third-ray creatures. Well, the third ray is also very violent, very militant, kind of nasty, and dinosaurs could be that way. They could also be somewhat nurturing because they lived, some of them lived in family units, and they developed some element of consciousness, but not to the level that mammals have. Very interesting. Well, what happened to the dinosaurs? Well, they got wiped out. They didn't get wiped out just from an asteroid or so, but they actually got wiped out because there are many changes on the planet. Too great of changes, so their adaptability was not strong enough to completely keep them to be as dominant as they had been. But they wouldn't have been destroyed completely if there hadn't been an asteroid that came down and finished them off. And guess what? Those asteroids that fall and do terrible things we think about, they're part of the plan. That's right. As a matter of fact, the day and time and everything is probably all planned out thousands, if not millions of years ahead of time. I'm not kidding you. Now, you might say, oh, no, it's just serendipity, et cetera, and then there's an evolutionary, and then there's chaos. And then... No, because, and I can prove this, because if 10 million years earlier or 10 million years later these events were to have taken place, the results would have been dramatically different, and life as we know it on Earth would not have occurred. Timing is critical in many of these issues. Now, yes, you could say, well, those are millions of years. I'm talking about a year. Well, everything in spiritual terms takes like millions of years. It doesn't do it by, you know, next week or next month. That's a human thing. But even when you're talking about 10 million years, that's a very narrow amount of time. And yes, if dinosaurs had been made extinct 10 million years earlier, mammals were not prepared at that particular junction to be able to survive. And there would be a good chance, or life as we would have known it, would have taken another 100, 150 million years to get back. And if it had been 10 million years later, there would have been another problem that would have developed, because dinosaurs were adapting and changing. This is recently discovered. And there may have been a new form of dinosaur that may have been even able to survive the results of the great asteroid catastrophe. And so, interestingly, it was just the right time, especially true of the Permian extinction, which came about 250 million years ago. That's even more obvious that that had to come about at that time. And there was another series of extinctions that happened at other times. There's about six of them that they know about at the present time. But the most important point I'm trying to make is that these things are not random. If you start playing around with the time and the numbers, change this condition or that condition, make the moon move away twice as fast or half as fast, everything falls apart. Yeah, oh yeah, there might be some kind of life, but we're never going to be here. There isn't going to be the kind of life that this planet is supposed to be creating. It isn't the kind of life that makes life meaningful to at least anything that is intelligent enough to know what that means. There may be maybe some kind of grunge running around on the ground. But you see, there's a meaning to the whole process. And for those of you listening, I think most of you are getting some of the picture I'm trying to paint. I'm not going to be able to finish today's show, I know that. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about next week's show so that you'll be able to, you know, kind of think about this during the next week. And if you want, you can contact me during the week. I'm available. Hey, listen, I'll talk to you on the phone or email. I hate email because you can't really do a dialogue that way. But whatever, or you can call in next week if you want. But here's something to think about. This whole process is designed to eventually create life that not only responds to its environment and is able to adapt to its environment, but eventually can recognize and respond and adapt to and create more of its creator. Yep, that's the big picture. And you know what that life is called? It begins with us, humans. Now, you might say, oh, how ethnocentric to think that human life is so important. This guy must think we're all so great. No, I don't think we're great. I think that what we come from, our souls, which I'll explain more about that next week, is what's great. But I think it's important for us to understand that if we start monkeying around, and I can tell you many more examples, I just didn't have the time tonight, with evolution and all the serendipitous things that are supposed to have taken place, and you change those things, you don't end up with us. You don't even end up with maybe even monkeys. You may not end up with mice. That's right. So for those of you who think that everything is chaos and it comes out of just randomness, well, then the odds are a zillion to one. They're beyond some number I can even think of that you would ever have what we have here in this world, which is screwed up and has many difficulties. Again, I'll cover more of that next week because that's part of the whole plan. But you see, ultimately, we're all here. We're all here to eventually become part of the plan that I'm talking about that we haven't been participating in any conscious way in the past, and that we're now responsible for almost in its entirety for the future. Now, that's a scary thing, because if we don't wake up and realize that this is what we're here about, that's why I'm out here talking to you about it. If we don't realize that we're here to do this, by the time we do, it may be too late because we're responsible. And what did I say at the beginning of the show? And I also wrote in several books. It started around 1975 that human beings have become responsible, whether we're aware of it or not, whether we're conscious of it or not. We're responsible for the outcome. And that's scary because most of us aren't aware or conscious of that. So I'm on the radio telling you. I'm trying to teach it. I'm trying to explain what I understand about it. Others are, I assume, doing some of that as well for similar reasons. And the whole idea is to get us to, like, wake up and to make some changes, which we can do. Yes, we're capable of doing it. And that we have been designed to do. We're not here by accident. We're here by design. That design is intelligent, for those of you who believe in intelligent design, but it's also evolutionary. Science is not excluded, it's included. The things that we are to do are not things that are completely mystical and we can never figure out. That was true before 1975, for sure, and it's been true for a long time. But now it's time for us to move on to a state in which we do have greater and greater understanding of what we are here to do and what we're responsible for. And with the understanding comes greater responsibility. But the good news is it also gives us the ability to make intelligent choices and to make changes that will make this a better place for us and for everyone else, because we're here to create, co-create more of our Creator. And we're here to do it all together, not individually. If I could do it myself, I guess I would try, but I can tell you that no one person and not even a group of people can do it. Most of us have to participate at some level. Scary as that sounds, we've got to get a lot of people on board in order to make the changes that we need to make. Of course, I'm going to talk a lot more about this next week, and I'm going to continue the story going on past the dinosaurs. It's very interesting. And talk about different kinds of human beings and how we developed ourselves. And then I'll be able to go more into the future and talk about how we are part of that plan. And hopefully you can see the whole picture. Because if you can see the picture, then maybe you can participate more within it. Well, I just wanted to make a note that for those of you in the Phoenix area, and this fits in with today's show topic, this Monday, I'm going to be over at the Mesa Borders talking about the beginning of human life, at 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. on Monday evening. That's the 17th of September. If you're in the Phoenix area, come by. I would love to have a chat with you. Love to see you, and we can talk more in depth about part of what the subject is of tonight. So, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.